Thanks for listening to the Susie Larson Life Podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always, always so honored to get to spend this time with you. I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's amazing word, and that heightens your awareness of his very real presence in your life. Well, I'm so grateful to have you listening today. We started a series last week that we're going to carry through, I think, for a couple months every Tuesday, calling Living with the End in Mind. And you'll hear a new show every Tuesday that causes you to think about living on purpose, living with eternity in mind. Last week, we talked about the financial side of things, life insurance, designated beneficiaries, inheritances, very practical stuff. And there was a huge response from that show. It was really practical. Well, today we're going to hear from a good friend of mine who's been on the show several times in the past. He's a trauma surgeon. He's going to give us an inside look at people who are on the brink of death and what we can learn from them. Dr. Tom Blee joins me today. He's the author of the riveting book, How to Save a Surgeon, and he's such a generous heart, and he's going to come and tell you stories that are going to keep you on the edge of your seat. He was so impacted by John Burke's book, Imagine Heaven, which we've had John on several times, and he's coming on, I think in the next few weeks, but Tom went and bought 5 copies of John Burke's book, Imagine Heaven, and he's pairing them with his book, 5 Copies, How to Save a Surgeon. So let me give you these titles, because 5 of you are going to win a book bundle today, and John is on, by the way, February 21st. So Dr. Tom Blee's book is How to Save a Surgeon, Stories of Impossible Healing. It reads like a novel, and it needs to be a movie, I'm just saying. John Burke's book is Imagine Heaven, Near-Death Experiences, God's Power, and the Exhilarating Future That Awaits You. If you want to just know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is with you at present and he's got a plan for your future, man, you want in on this book bundle. Text the word book to get in on the drawing. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Quick announcement, just asking you, let us pray for you. We would love to pray for you. We believe in the power of prayer. You can hop on our website at myfaithradio.com. Find the link that says, let us pray for you. Click on it and let us know what you need. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Tom Blee is married to Catherine, and together they share 6 children. In addition to being a trauma and emergency general surgeon, Dr. Tom is creator and co-founder of the nonprofit organization Life Team, Leadership Impacting the Family Environment. He literally is a superhero, I'm just saying. As an inner city trauma surgeon, Dr. Tom was dismayed with the revolving door of violence and despair that was in his hospital. In 2014, under the umbrella of Life Team, Dr. Tom brought together community leaders and organizations, bringing resources to the bedside of patients, offering an environment of hope to bring about true healing. And that is a very clean way of saying he's right in the middle of gang activity. So he's at one moment saving their lives, and the next moment casting a vision for their life so they can really believe that they were saved for a purpose. In addition to being an author, a speaker, and a mentor, Dr. Tom looks forward to his next life adventure as a cattle ranch hand. All right. Dr. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry I'm laughing.
Pretty fun bio, don't you think?
It is. Well, and I clearly get help from my wife to write these from Catherine. Yes. And, you know, in our group and with Jamie Winship, being on last week and in the identity work, it's like, I'm a cattle rancher. God says I'm a cattle rancher. And there's more to being a cowboy than being a cowboy, and that's in me. And she's, and even last night, she's like, do you have a horse? And I'm like, nope, I have a cat.
So cattle.
A cat. But I'll get there at some point.
That's right.
As we transition away from this, I will use cattle ranching, which I'm learning now in veterinary medicine to bring. This is where I want to bring the inner city kids too. Come to the country. So
wow, the vision that God is giving you just keeps growing. It's so amazing. Wow. Well, let's start here. What's God been talking to you about these days?
Okay, so give me a little leeway here. This may bring us into the next commercial break. I think when God gets moving fast in a trauma surgeon's life, it's like, I got to get it all out. But something started after Christmas. My son, Jack, called me, and he went through a huge life transition. He made a decision about moving away from school, and actually he is a cattle ranch hand. And he called me and he said, I'm reading the Bible. And I'm like, that's amazing. And he said, have you ever read the book of John? I said, yep. And he said, well, do you know the story of the woman at the well? And I said, I do. And he started laughing. And I said, why are you laughing? He said, Jesus knew everything about that lady. And so we got into this discussion about where are we going? What wells are you going to in the world of COVID and everything that's happening? I think we're all asking those questions. But that stuck with me for months. And then it transitioned to discussions with your husband. And he's circulating Jamie Winship's things about identity and the identity in the kingdom.
He's talking about my hubby. Yes. So keep going.
Yeah. The identity of the kingdom versus the identity of the empire. And I really started to reach in. You know, if listeners haven't listened to that podcast, you have to. That's a big next step.
Yeah.
So I'll be the first guest to buy someone else's book and give it away and promote a podcast that I'm not even on. So that's
exactly right. So that's a kingdom mindset right there, Tom. Just say.
And one thing that Jamie and his wife talk about are the to be statements in the Bible. And so yesterday I sat down and said, I want to see if it's true. You know, like Jamie says, if the Bible's true 2,000 years ago, it has to be true today. So I opened the book of John where my bookmark was, and there's the story of the paralytic at the Bethesda Baths, right? And so here's this man for 38 years trying to get to the water. The angel once a day stirs up the water. The first one in gets healed, and everyone else is kind of out of luck until the water stirs again. And Jesus comes up to him, knows everything about him, and says, you know, what's your deal? And he says, well, I'm paralyzed. I'm alone. I can't get there fast enough. I have no help. And Christ looks at him and says, well, do you want to be made well? And I've read that so many times, and it's like, well, of course he does. He wants to walk. And what Christ is saying is like, no. I want to change who you are. Do you want to be, T-O-B-E, known as made well? And I think the man's like, yep. And that's when Christ says, then get up and walk. You know, and this man presents himself to the empire, the religious leaders, and can't explain it. He's like, I don't know. This guy just came up to me, asked me if I wanted to be made well, and I said, sure. And now I am made well. And they can't understand it. It's two different conversations. It's a kingdom conversation of Christ entering your life versus what the empire is saying. Mm. And Jesus comes back to him and says, you know, in the synagogue, you're made well. He's like, I am, you know, but this guy can't explain it. But he's now a witness. I don't know what happened, but I can tell you this man came into my life, changed who I was. I am now known as made well, and it changed everything. And that circles around to, I think, why I'm even here today. Years ago, and the story is on the podcast. You know, you've unraveled, you have a history, my history on these podcasts at a point in my life in my own hospital where I was facing criminal charges. Something happened that I never did, and it was such a bad accusation that I was in jail. And I was sitting in the hospital, just getting out of jail, had to talk to my hospital and tell them what happened. So then I'm on suspension, a guarded suspension. I was functionally homeless because I had to move in with my sister. And I'm in this hospital saying, I don't even know what my identity is, but I didn't put the question forward like that. I just said, okay, God, if you exist, show me your miracles and I'll write the book. And that's what happened. And so what I've learned even in this last week is God saying, you didn't come to me with, I can't walk, I can't get in the pool, I don't have friends. You asked me to change your identity. You asked me to make you a witness, to be a witness, and to make you a storyteller, to be a storyteller. And I think that's part of what I'm learning and why I'm here today. It's like, I'm a witness to what's happening in these hospitals. God's never left without a witness. In the book of Revelation, there's two witnesses. Mm-hmm. But every aspect of life, God has witnesses. And for me, the discussion today is like, I don't know what happened, but I'm going to tell you what I saw. And I think that's what brings it around for me today.
It's amazing. And friends, if you want to go back, if you just get on our website, myfaithradio.com, and search Dr. Tom Blee, you'll hear past stories because he had to get through that quick because there's so many current stories he needs to tell. But a false accusation landed him in jail. But if I remember right, you ministered to your cellmate all night long, right?
Right.
And you were still a very new believer, just seeking out the things of God. But already he had you ministering. And it's just so in your DNA, Tom, to not just, you know, be a trauma surgeon, which is amazing, but to minister to the soul, minister to the story. And you are a storyteller. So when we come back, he's going to tell some of those stories. He's got a recent one that, you know, Tom and I and Dr. Troy and a few others are in a group together. And Kev, my hubby, had lunch with Tom and one of our other men. And he came home and sat down. He's a man's man. 6'3", big husky guy, works in the construction industry. He sat down and he broke down and wept when he relayed the story that Tom is about to share. He just cried. And then I cried, of course. When we come back, Tom will tell that story. Dr. Tom Blee is my guest today. He is an amazing trauma surgeon. He lives in the heart of and works in the heart of just gang activity, life and death situations. And this is one of the shows in our series of Living with the End in Mind. He's going to bring you to the edge, good and bad, when people came to the edge of their eternity and what we can learn from all that. If you've got questions, text them in. Tom came armed with 5 copies of his book, How to Save a Surgeon, Miraculous Stories of Healing, and John Burke's book, Imagine Heaven, because that had such a big impact. So 5 of you will win a book bundle of 2 really powerful books filled with amazing stories. Text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. If you're a new listener, we want to officially welcome you with a free welcome pack gift. Request yours today at myfaithradio.com. When I feel my hope about to break, I will cling to your unchanging grace. Let the waters come and the earth give way. I'll be dancing in the rain. My feet are on the rock. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live. I have our good friend, Dr. Tom Blee, on the show. He's a trauma surgeon, and we have him strategically on this day because every Tuesday for about a couple of months, we're going to do a series called Living with the End in Mind. Last week, we talked about just the business logistics. What does it mean to have your affairs in order with your money, your accounts, your designated beneficiaries? But today, we're going to talk about some near-death experiences with Tom and his patients. He's constantly in the middle of gang activity, dealing with young kids with gunshot wounds whose lives are lost. And it's amazing how God opens doors for conversations. This particular story moved my husband to tears. So I'll just set you up. Go ahead and tell us this story.
Sure. And the caveat is any story I tell and any name I use is with full permission of these of the patient and people. So I don't, you know, I keep it quiet when we need to. But this young man's like, go tell my story. Give my address if you want to, because he's so changed. But even in my world, every day is kind of different. You're just waiting for a pager to go off. And this was no different than any other. It was 4:20 in the afternoon. It was up in the metro area. And there's probably people listening that know about this. But this young man was at a restaurant and walked out. And he has his own history of why this happened. But somebody came up and shot him. He took one round through and through to the right arm, and then an entry wound into the right armpit. The pager just says, you know, gunshot wound to the chest. Right then you're like, okay, these are always kind of hairy. But we ran out of the trauma bay, and when medics come running in, it's like, all right, we're cracking a chest. Let's see what happens here. This young man came in, and he, in a very typical picture, so when somebody is dying from blood loss, they are so agitated, anxious, angry. It's a mess. And I just looking at him like, okay, everyone, he's dying. And you kind of say, it's like, we just need blood. Don't do anything else. Just get blood. And you have to take your team of 12 that are so tuned to do certain things. It's like, everyone hold him down. Anyone else that can get IVs, get them. And there was a medical student in there, and he's running around. I said, put your hand on this groin. That is your only job. Do not remove your hand. You're our monitors. We don't have time to get monitors set up. And so blood comes rapidly, but COVID affected us in our blood bank supply, but it's coming. It never comes fast enough. We're waiting for mass transfusion. Like, you cannot put him to sleep until we get blood. If you put someone to sleep in this condition, they die instantly. The whole sympathetic tone, all of the stuff, the adrenals, everything that you and Dr. Troy talk about, this is happening in huge amounts. So if you release that, they're dead. And they're looking at me. I'm like, don't put him to sleep. So I called up to the OR. I'm like, we're coming up hot. As soon as I can get some blood, I'll put him to sleep and we'll go. And so that happened. We get blood hooked up. We get blood running. I'm like, now put him to sleep. And so they put him to sleep, and I'm like, now run, because we're like two stories up. And that med student's, I'm like, don't, you're running with us. And so we got to the elevator, and he said, I don't have a pulse. I said, I'm sure you don't. You know, I had time to get a chest x-ray, and I could see a bullet behind the left heart. And I'm like, oh, he's through the heart. You can just tell. I'm like, he's through the heart. We don't have much time. So as we're running, I called the OR. I said, he's dead. He's coded, but open. I said, call the cardiac team in. But I said, I'm going to do a sternotomy. So we got him in the room, and this is kind of a splash and crash. You just put him on the bed. They're prepping. Unfortunately, you don't wash your hands. You gown and glove, and it's in the chest. So saw him open, and it's open the heart. His heart's the size of a football, which it shouldn't be. You open it, and then there's just a liter of blood around the heart, and you scoop that out. And it's like, there's the hole, right through his right ventricle. So I put my finger on it, and it's like, all right, there we go. It's beating. And now I have something to work with. And now it's just kind of hold your finger, catch up, and then it's start the repair process. So we put these certain stitches in, pledgeting stitches, clean it up. The cardiac team, I love my heart surgeons. They're in 20 minutes later, like, you need help? I'm like, just double check my work, you know, and they're wonderful. And they're like, looks good, and, you know. So I put this fella into the surgical ICU, and it was probably about midnight, and he was wiggling by then. I'm like, we're going to be okay with this one, I think. And so that's the whole process. Now, what's...
I mean, he could have and should have died on the elevator.
He was dead. Right? He was clinically dead. He had no pulse. He had no blood pressure. When I opened his chest, his heart was not beating. He's dead. And it was 8 minutes.
Wow.
So,
oh, wow.
It was 8 minutes before we established it. So he's dead, okay? I had left. I think it was deer hunting season, and we do shift work. So you just check out to the next one and so on. And actually, one of my partners who deer hunts with me was calling to make some plans. He said, hey, by the way, I extubated that young man. I pulled his breathing tube out, and I said, well, how's he doing? He's like, he's perfectly fine, completely intact, no problems whatsoever. I'm like, awesome. And I never really doubted it. You get these feelings and you get these scenarios, but this was one of those, you know, I pray. I'm like, well, God, this is you. Direct our team. Keep us calm. There was no doubt. I mean, I'm like, I know this kid's going to lose his pulses. I know we've got what we need upstairs. Just keep moving. And that's what we did.
Wow.
I moved through my deer hunting season, and there's times where I know that God needs me to talk to somebody. Catherine will say it all the time. I'm like, I don't want to go into this shift tonight. And she's like, you know, somebody's going to be sent to you to talk to. I'm like, I know, but I wanted this one here. Now I'll pray sometimes. Don't get him discharged yet. And his discharge got hung up. It was interesting because of the fray that was surrounding the shooting. So this was in the news. You saw it in St. Paul. You know, because it was a huge car accident. He leaves the site of the shooting. He's trying to drive to Regions. He rolled his car. It shut down the interstate. So everybody kind of knew. But when I went into work the next day, I'm like, oh, he's still here. So I ran up and to talk to him. And there he is with his mother and his girlfriend. And they have two children together. And I said, how are you doing? Good. I said, do you know you were dead? He's like, I heard. And I say this to a lot of people, say, what'd you see? And he gave me this very typical look, because people don't ask. And I don't think medical providers ask all the time. And I ask a lot. I'm like, what'd you see? And he's like, I was in the most amazing light. And he said, I met my uncle, who had died years before. And he said, my uncle was introducing me to family members that I'd never met. And he said, then kind of time was up. And he said, he woke up and he said, I know I'm going to be all right. He said, I've just been calm. And I have peace. And I think it really shook his mom, who was there, because, you know, moms in these settings and stuff, that's often your number one patient, so to speak. The victim of the shooting, for different reasons, may not be engaging. But then mom's jaw was open, girlfriend's jaw was opening. He just said, I want to thank you. And I said, you're welcome. And I said, now we got to figure out what we're going to do with this. I said, you know, you're alive for a reason. God entered your life, and that's what we need to do. And I said, and I love doing this. And I said, here's my cell phone, you know, here's my card. And it happens that he doesn't live very far from me. He's about 15, 20 minutes. I live south of the metro area and he lives near there. And I said, let's just get together and start talking about this. And that's what we did. He kind of disappeared and this happens, but it was probably 2 weeks where the text message came in, and then we connected, and I said, "Wow, this is what I said. Let's go eat. Let's take you out for a meal." And he said, "Absolutely." And he's still on a cast in his right hand and all kinds of stuff. But so we go to this little restaurant in my town, we just start talking. And this young man, you can tell, you know, his history with his family and what he has a leadership skill, and he has voice. And you can tell this kid's a leader, and this kid is articulate, and this kid is family-oriented. You know, great characteristics to lead a gang, but used the wrong way, right? Mm. So I'm just letting him. I'm like, I'm talking out loud. I can see a table next to me, and he's so boisterous and he's so colorful, but he's also kind of vulgar, right? I mean, got to polish him up.
And you're telling him at this point, you know, you were saved for a purpose. You were kind of charging him with some vision around this time, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm like, you're going to, this is God talking to you, because he kept asking me, did I really die? Did I really die? And I said, yes, you did, but this is God trying to, you know, talk to you. And he's like, I don't believe in God. I don't know how I'm ever going to see God. And I said, well, he's going to show up. He's going to show you something that only you can recognize that it's God talking to you. And as he unravels this story, and it was like 45 minutes worth, and he went through his whole life. This is why we grew up. This is what we did. This is why this event happened. This is what I think. This is what I feel. And just as we got to the end of it and took a breath, the two women sitting next to us stood up, and one came over and said, excuse me, I think I'm supposed to give you something. And he looked at her and she said, I don't even live in this town. I'm shopping. This was just in the Christmas, very before Christmas. And she says, God says you're supposed to have this. And she slides across the table a Christmas ornament, and it's a heart. And the hanging apparatus for the ornament, the hole, is exactly on the right side where this kid was shot. I'm like, that is crazy. And his eyes are wide open, and he takes it. And she said, it's amazing, your story. Please keep going. And she looked at me and said, that's incredible. And I said, can you believe on November 2nd, this young man was dead? And she looked at him and said, that's my birthday.
What?
And he just stopped. And she just said, you know, thank you for your story. Keep going. And she left. And he looked at me and he's like, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, I told you that's what happens. And I think we're hitting a break here, but it keeps continuing to unravel. And we can talk a little bit more about what he did with that part of it.
Wow. So imagine, friends, he's sitting at this cafe, and these women, I think if I remember right, they were nurses, and they didn't mean to eavesdrop.
Teachers.
They were teachers.
Teachers,
okay.
Yep.
But they were overhearing this conversation, so she hands him an ornament with a heart that has a hole right where his bullet wound was. That was right after he was wondering when Tom was saying, God can speak to you in a way that you'll know it's him. And Tom and this patient have kept the conversation going. God's got a plan for this young man. I'm predicting he may come back with Tom someday and tell more of this story. We're going to tell more of these amazing stories when we come back. Dr. Tom Blee's my guest. We'll be back in a minute. Hope you're having a fantastic day. We are having a great conversation with our good friend, Dr. Tom Blee. He's a trauma surgeon in the inner city, and so he's often in the middle of gang activity. And having been a friend for a number of years, my hubby and I pray during the gang season, because that's when he's overworked and exhausted. But he does more than patch up people from gunshot wounds, but he reaches into their lives, befriends them, walks with them, and introduces them to just a God who loves them and a purpose of God written over their lives. And I don't know if you have more to say about Ernesto, is that his name?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So before the break, I'll just give a quick synopsis. This young man was on the fringes of some gang activity, took a bullet into the heart and into the shoulder. He died basically on the elevator. He had no pulse for 8 minutes. And by God's grace, Tom put him back together. God put that pulse back in his, you know, heart and his body, and he came back. And Tom's been walking with him now, and he's getting a sense of his purpose. Is there any other updates you want to give before we go to the next story?
Sure. You know, with Ernesto, this story continues to go. You know, his mind is blown by a God event, and he doesn't know what to do with it. And I just check in with him. And I think what happens in the world, and especially in the hospitals, is miracles are quickly explained away.
Wow.
And I called him and said, don't talk to anyone yet. Just let this sink in. This is really cool. Let it sink in. And he's like, yeah, this is the coolest thing ever. And I called him a day or two later, and he's like, oh, I told my mom and I told my dad. And there's the generational stuff that we're always, you know, dealing with as far as gangs and so on. It's a generational thing. And it's like, okay, he's now talking to his father about it and his family and his brothers. And I'm like, this is fabulous. You know, and he went to the pet store and he still had a cast on his arm. And the guy that owns the pet store is like, what's wrong with your arm? He's like, oh, I was shot and I died. And then the surgeon took me to lunch and this lady gave me this ornament and it's the craziest thing. And the guy's like, that's God. I love Jesus. Here's my name and my phone number. Call me. And he starts talking to Ernesto. And Ernesto called me. He's like, he asked the guy, he said, do you know Dr. Blee? And the gentleman's like, never met him. He's like, you talk just like him. And so talking to Ernesto, I'm like, that's the language you need to hear. That's what's going to get you new and healed and so on.
Yeah.
And so he and I continue to communicate. And you and I talked about, so my friend John Turnipseed, who's been with me many times on this radio show, passed away last November. And I think some of your listeners have heard us speak together. And that was a huge loss. But, you know, John and I always talked about start a fathering center in Red Wing where I live. And that's what I did. I said, to honor John, it's time. I just need to go do this. So last Wednesday night was my first fathering program, so to speak, and my son's there, and my friend Jesse, and a real success story from the Goodhue County Treatment Center and stuff. And Ernesto's like, I'm there. And here he comes. And now he's following us. So we hold it in a church. And we finish at 6:30. They do the mass. And we came upstairs and said, I need you to meet my pastors. And his hand doesn't work. His right hand doesn't work, which is a fascinating part of the story. He and I were talking, you know, about this hand. He's like, I can't bend my pinky finger or my index finger. I said, what? Okay. I said, let's work through this. I said, what would happen if you saw the man that shot you in Walmart? And he said, watch out, Walmart. It's going down. And I said, really? He said, that's how we do it. And I said, okay, now picture yourself holding a gun right now and pulling the trigger. And he looked at me and said, I can't. I said, exactly. I said, God still knows your heart. Your most pressing injury right now is you can't pull a trigger. And he's like, man. So we went to church after this meeting and we came up and he's great. He sat there and we listened and it was time for communion. He said, what is this? And he said, I've been at church forever. He said, it's communion. He said, what do I do? I said, put your hands together and take the host. So he did. And I said, no, put your right hand on top. And he said, why? I said, because it's going to heal your hand. He's like, really? I said, yeah. No, okay, don't go to miraculous healing, but this is a kid saying, okay, I can do this. So he takes the next step. He goes up, he takes the host in his hand, and he looks at me, and we're in this big line. He says, now what? I said, use your left hand, put it in your mouth, and eat it. And that's communion. That's you, and, you know, that's what this is all about, breaking bread. He's like, awesome. So after the service, he met the pastors and stuff. He said, what do I do with it? I said, keep going and keep putting that host in your right hand. That's how you're going to heal that hand. That's what God wants you to focus on, a different way to use that hand. Be patient. Stay with me. We'll get the hand healed. This kid's hand will heal. I know it will, right? And so that's where we're sitting. So when I asked him if I could tell his story for the show, I mean, that's where he's at right now. He's like, yes. He's like, tell my story because I don't want to be a hypocrite. And I said, well, explain that to me. He says, I want to be different. I want to be known as different. I want to show it's different. You know, and if you can tell my story and use it, then I know I'm different. He's already looking for the next part of the identity and so on. Mm, wow. And yeah. So
let's pray for Ernesto, friends. Remember him, because he's God has snatched him out of the claws of the enemy, and he's in that process of seeking and finding Jesus, and keep him in your prayers. You've had plenty of scenarios. I mean, my word, your book, How to Save a Surgeon, is just seriously reads like a fast-paced novel. But tell us a couple other stories that are in your heart of people who've come to that edge of eternity, and maybe what we can learn from their story.
Sure. So even in my world, I mean, if you're meeting me, this is probably the worst day of your life. In the world of emergency general surgery and trauma surgery, it's almost you're at the edge of the end of your life. And the miracles that I collected in the book, you know, some of people I blatantly ask, what did you see? And, you know, opening the book with Caitlin's story, and we've talked about Caitlin many times, you know, hit by a dump truck, slow transport to my institution, basically arrives with active CPR, didn't seem dead. There was nothing that God said, she's dead. So you just keep going. And she's one
that let's just back up. She was broadsided. By,
yeah,
right.
She pulls
so this
out.
Is a little teenage girl,
yep,
in a small car,
yep,
right?
Hit by a dump truck at highway speeds, yep, on the driver's door. Yep.
On the driver's door. So
yep. She was crushed, broke.
Crushed. Okay. Yep. Back yep. to her story.
Yep.
Okay.
And she couldn't be flown to us. The weather was horrible. She came by ground. Her transport time was over 60 minutes, and she arrived with, you know, data, blood pressure of 60 over nothing, which is really nothing. And tons of volume resuscitation and CPR, but she just didn't look dead. It may sound crass, but you just learn these things. It's the gut feeling. It's like, she's not dead. So we ran up to the operating room. That was one of the times where the active CPR and blunt trauma just doesn't exist. You just don't do it. You call it. It's less than 0.5% a chance of living. And I remember my anesthesiologist saying, what's going on here? There's a CPR machine. I'm like, just keep going. And we did, you know, and it was busted spleen and busted pelvis and all kinds of stuff. But we brought her through the process, and she was another one. She just had this glow, and she healed so quickly that I asked her, what did you see? And she said, I saw everything. I rode above the ambulance. I was in such peace. You know, when you went to the operating room, I was asleep, but she just said, I woke up and knew I was going to be okay. I mean, that's a very common story. Towards the end of the book is Brad, who was hit by a train. And Brad's life was spent in the Sereno gangs, the Mexican mafia in Southern California. 20-plus years in prison, 30 years in the gangs, hit by a train. And worked with him for months, got to know him and actually helped write his book, In It for Life. But I asked him just recently, I'm like, what did you see? And he's like, it was the most amazing light, amazing peace. And he's like, I knew I was going to be okay. You know, there's this theme there that if not asked, many people can't explain it. When God gets involved, it's like Ernesto at the restaurant. He's like, I can't explain what happened. I'm like, yep, that's when you know it's God. Mm-hmm. And many people, I think, don't talk about these stories because they just can't explain it. And in some people, it comes out as anxiety and as clinical situations and as certain things that they just can't explain. But unless they're asked, and unless you know the language, and that, you know, that's part of Jonathan Burke's book for me. I'm like, that book, that's a real deal. That really explains a lot of what I witness every day and in my career. And I can tell you something, my mother, who died last year, we spent the last 6 months of her life reading that book together. She grew up in a bad form of Catholicism, never thinking it was good enough. But we read that book out loud and together, and it was like, that was the piece she needed. It's like, it is real. There is something there. It is better.
I know I've shared this before, but when my dad was in his last hours, he was sitting on a recliner chair, and we were all surrounded, and he was getting that gurgle, and he was, you know, not really conscious, and we just sort of knew it was just a matter of time. And in just a moment, his eyes opened up. He reached for my mom's arm and pulled her hand over his heart, and with his other hand, he pointed up to the corner of the ceiling, and his eyes lit up. He goes, do you see them?
Yeah.
Do you see them? Do you see them? Like, he was so excited, and then he let go, and then he died. And it was like, you know, I believe God's mercy and grace is so profound that even people who've rejected him is, I mean, you have to decide in this life. You know, once you die, your eternal destination is set. Some people are saying that you can decide after. You can't. I mean, this is the day of salvation. But there are these moments when you're at the edge of eternity in his mercy that he gives you a glimpse of either heaven or hell because he loves you so much. And I think so many of us, Tom, feel like, what's taking God so long? Please come back. And his reason is he wills that none would perish. He's not slow in keeping his promises. He delays because he's got more children that he knows will love him if they knew him. And like Ernesto, the fact that he is, you know, living in this gang activity and God allows him to meet you and then meet this other guy and meet those teachers, it's like God's chasing after him. And if someone's listening today and you've never said yes to Jesus, don't play with your life. You don't know if you've got tonight or tomorrow. And turn to him. He's the only king that dies for his people. And Tom, if you just want to add anything to that, because there are those moments where you get the glimpse of glory. And I really do believe we're going to be surprised when we get to heaven that some we thought died without Jesus, maybe they had a moment of clarity and the Holy Spirit came and gave them a glimpse and they had a moment to choose. But I need to be clear theologically, once you're dead and gone, you don't get to choose after that. I mean, just according to Scripture, that today's a day of salvation. But anything you want to add to that?
Right. It's a confusing question to try to answer what happens when we die. And even trying to talk about near-death experiences, for me, it's like, well, I don't know if it's a near-death experience. The dude was dead. You know, Caitlin was dead. But what does that mean? In John's book, it's like, well, it's near death because you meet and talk, but you never cross that barrier. Well, where is
that
barrier?
That's what I mean.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't. I don't know what the complexity of it is. I know that now, if I get on my knees, and which I did on March 1st, 2014, and said, I can't do this, God, please help me, he did. And I know right now, as I talk to these young men, they're like, why do you do this stuff? And I'm like, dude, you need a miracle. And there's only one miracle maker I know, and his name is Jesus. So let's talk about it. You know, yeah. You need hope. And I know the hope giver. So let's talk about it. And mm-hmm. and it comes down to two. It's like, I don't know when that conversation happens. My friend John used to say, you know, when the bullet hits the flesh, the conversation of 1,000 years can indeed happen. You know, we have patients that die instantly, but there's some that struggle. And it's like, and my wife and I will say it, they're talking to Jesus. There is a conversation happening. He wants you on the side. It is a free choice. Please come with me. And you see it in the difference of how people die with faith and without faith, dramatically different in hospitals.
Yeah. We're going to pause. When we come back, we'll talk a bit more about that. I have a friend who's a hospice nurse, and she's near those situations all the time. By the way, before I say what I'm going to say, Hugh texted in and said, it's not an angel, it's Jesus. Jesus said, when everything's ready, I'm going to come and get you. Jesus comes for us, and he's at the front of our welcoming committee. That's a very important point. But my hospice friend nurse said that there's been times where she sees, like what my dad saw, she sees people, they're light up and they're ready. And she said, there's a vast difference in these places where you're in the last stage before you die. Vast difference in the sense of just atmosphere between someone who emanates peace because precious in the sight of the Lord are the death of his saints and those who have rejected Christ, who have no peace. She said, it's drastic. And she said, there was one time when a man was coming to the end and his eyes opened up like my dad's, and yet he was terrified, and he was backing up into his bed, so terrified of what he was going towards. And this, you know, this is nothing to mess with. Eternity is not something to trifle with, to put off for another day. Now is the day. Today's the day of salvation. Talking to Dr. Tom Blee, he's a trauma surgeon. We're talking about living with the end in mind. Tom, out of his own wallet here, bought 5 copies of John Burke's book, Imagine Heaven, and it's a fantastic book. And then Tom wrote an amazing book as well, How to Save a Surgeon, Stories of Impossible Healing. Both of these books have riveting stories, and we've got 5 book bundles to give away. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. Back in a minute. Faith Radio podcasts are produced by the listener-supported ministry, of Faith Radio. If you're interested in becoming a team member, a donor to this ministry, you can support the podcast anytime and donate at myfaithradio.com.
God is in this story.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live. We're doing a series every Tuesday for about a couple of months on living with the end in mind. Last week, we talked about the logistics with the finance guy, just insurance, inheritance, designated beneficiaries. I mean, we thought we'd get a half hour out of that conversation. We got a whole hour. It was really practical, important. Today, we're talking to our good friend, Dr. Tom Blee, who is a trauma surgeon, but who also, God, he's right in the middle of gang activity. He's constantly patching up people who've been shot multiple times in the middle of this just gang-infested city. And yet God continually uses him not only to save their lives, but then to point them to Jesus. It's such a beautiful thing. And he's got ministries that he has started on the side to just help these young people find a better way to live. And you were saying, and I was saying before the break even, that there are times because you're like you said, when people come to your trauma bay for trauma surgery, it's the worst day of their life. And there's lots of life-death situations. And so you have lots of conversations about what did you see? So say more about that as far as what people don't always see their grandma and the light. They sometimes see glimpses of hell.
Oh, sure, sure. There was a rash before COVID hit of drug dealer versus purchaser gunshot activity and so on. It's a very classic pattern. It was interesting. Whoever drew the gun first would hit the other one. It would be thigh, groin, chest, face. It was somebody you could see that was pulling a gun, shooting and turning and trying to run away. And the other one didn't know that the gun was being fired, right? So, and it's an ugly situation to begin with, but we did have one young man that went through that situation. So it was everything is injured and including his face. And so it was multiple operations. And every time his jaw was wired shut and was breathing too. It was just a mess. But every time we went in to try to wake this young man up, it was horrible. I mean, he's struggling and flailing and fighting, and it's nasty. And a lot of times these young men don't know that they're not in the situation that they were in. They still believe that when we wake them up, they're being attacked and being shot. And that one was so bad. Actually, John came in and prayed over this young man. And it took a couple of days, got it settled down. But so he left the intensive care unit, came up to where I was in the general trauma floor that day. And he was just so mad. And his jaw is wired shut. And I remember him sitting on the edge of the bed, and he has a cup. And he's just letting spit drain into the cup. And he wouldn't talk to anybody. And I just looked at him and I said, "Why are you so mad?" And he said, "You can't figure the words," but he said, "It stunk." And I said, "What?" He said, "I died and it stunk." Really? And this is a classic description in John's book too. It's of the stench of hell. And I said, "Well, what is it?" He says, I need to get out of this hospital and I need to tell my brother to stop doing what he's doing. He does not want to go to that place." And I said, "Wow." And so it was a couple of days of talking with him, to him, about what he saw and the ability to change. You can change right now. You can change instantly. There's a guy I know that you should get to know named Jesus where you can change. And that's what we worked on. And he did. You know, there's just the prayer is not far away, especially in the world of gangs. There are mothers that pray and aunties that pray and grandmas that pray and so on. So it's not an unknown entity, so to speak, to most of these young men. It's just forgotten. And so they do often warm up to it. And even for me in many of these situations, especially when they feel the darkness, you feel it in the room. You need to do something different. And there's nothing I can do but pray. These are the patients I'm like, "I'll pray for you right now." And we hold hands and pray. Mm.
How do your coworkers respond? I mean, they obviously know you're a person of faith and you're super competent. You know, people don't know, but you're sort of a legend over, you know, where you work. But seriously, though, I mean, you are so competent and you have such a command of that trauma center. So that does help. I think when you're excellent at your work, it does give you a platform to be able to speak. But how do your coworkers respond to that?
Yeah. Well, thank you for the compliment. But I think it's, I mean, they know I'm different because of what I do. And I can tell you when I released the book, I was very afraid. I'm like, they're going to know me. You know, I was new to the faith and I'm telling these stories. I'm like, what's going to happen in this building? And it's like, okay, I'm learning now. Don't worry about the consequences. Put the truth out there and let God take care of the consequences. Mm-hmm. And when that book came out, there was like 50 of my ER staff that formed a prayer group and Bible study and started doing these things different. And then there were people that were calling me and saying, can you intervene here and do this situation? And what I've learned in that thing is, okay, they're seeing something different because I'm really trying to do something different. But I would hesitate to pray at times with patients. I'm like, I don't want someone to walk in. This is really weird. A doctor's praying. But now there's times I go in and I'm like, I'm not clearing the room. If you're clean in this room right now, you're going to hear this prayer happen. And I don't know how many times that I've done that where people are like, they'll join into prayer or they'll grab me later or say, that's amazing. Or, you know, you should write a book. And I'm like, I did write one. Here it is. So I've learned, you know, it's just, it's got to exude out of you. And I hope it's exuding out of me for the right reasons. But that's just it. And part of prayer, you know, when you're trying to do a show like this and tell people, you know, to have the end in mind, it's like, listen, let me tell you, you don't know when your last breath is. I see it every day. Get right now, you know, and whatever that means. You have to. You don't know when and people say when they meet me, you don't look like a trauma surgeon. I'm like, you don't want to know what one looks like, right? You shouldn't know. But it's real and, you know, please take the next step and talk to somebody or talk to Jesus. He's ready. He'll listen.
Yeah. We were supposed to have John Bevere on yesterday to talk about the fear and the awe of God, you know, what that means, reverential awe of God. He had a family emergency, so we put in a replay of my past conversation, which God used so much yesterday. I'm so grateful. We're going to get him rescheduled, but I want to just tell you, one thing that's constant that seems to happen for these people who come to the edge of eternity and then they come back is a reverential awe of God. I mean, those who encounter the love of God are undone. They don't want to leave. They know peace, light. They're known and they know it. And God is so much bigger than we think. And we are just playing around because there's not a sense of fear and trembling before him because there hasn't been a strong manifestation except for in the places and the pockets of people that are actually seeking him. But that's one of the reasons, Tom, we wanted to do this series is to get you to the edge to go, there's a day of reckoning for every single person. And when we see God, every knee is going to bow. Every tongue is going to confess that Jesus is Lord. He's the King. And, you know, the mountains will tremble, you know. And I want so much for us to enter into that reverential awe now because it'll change how we live, won't it?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. My wife and I had this very conversation, too, about fear, which is the hard part. The Hebrew word for fear doesn't mean be afraid of. It means drop down on your knees. Holy cow, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I want more of that. You know, and I think that's part of it. For me, it was growing up, but for all the listeners, like, I'm afraid of that guy, God. I've been taught the wrong thing, and he's condemning and stuff. It's like, no. Wrong word. Move into that awe of God, you know, but do it today. You're done with finish the show today, but then call somebody.
Yeah. You know? Get on your knees and just say, Jesus, speak to me. And just, you know, again, we'll cover this on a future show, but the idea of fear, it's not being afraid of God. There are, when you look at different verses that talk about fear, there's no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. That original word for that word fear is like, I think it's phobia or phobos, where we get the word phobia. But it's kind of that I'm afraid, you know, like a dad who's inconsistent and always flying off the handle. There's this insecure fear because you never know what you're going to get. There's not that in love. Right. But the kind of fear that other verses talk about is a reverential awe that makes your knees buckle because he is so majestic and so powerful, but he's also so pure that he sees into the depths of your soul. And I think it's just so important that we not take God for granted and we don't think that we don't take him lightly Because just because you haven't encountered him maybe recently doesn't mean he's not as powerful as he is. And I'm just praying we can live with the end in mind. Tom, this was so good. And I'm just going to keep praying for Ernesto and trusting that God's going to give him visions for the call of God in his life. And he's going to rise up and be the leader that God made him to be. And
Amen.
Thank you for the work that you do in some of the toughest situations. We sure love you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Ah, appreciate it so much. Dr. Tom Blee is my guest, and thanks to him, we've got 5 book bundles to give away. His book, How to Save a Surgeon, and John Burke's Imagine Heaven. Text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.